Buenas.
Buenas.
Welcome back to Film Posers for Boricuas, ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, we are going to be giving you a recap of the 2021 Sundance Film Festival, and our moderator will be me, Josie Melendez. So, before we get into Sundance, just wanted to give a little bit of history of the festival itself. The Sundance Film Festival is an annual film festival organized by the Sundance Institute. It was founded in 1978 and it takes place each January in Park City, Utah, Salt Lake City. The 2021 Sundance Film Festival took place from January 28th to February 3rd of this year. The first lineup of competition films was announced back in December 15, 2020. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the festival combined screenings at the Ray Theater in Park City, Utah, as well as satellite screenings across the world, even including Puerto Rico, which was very exciting. And it was also, so it was hybrid, so there were in-person screenings, and then most of the festival was online, which is how we were able to attend. So the posers were invited as accredited press. We were approved. So we received two press passes, and Gabriela and I got the chance to go. And it was very exciting. It was a combination of being able to watch virtual screenings online from the 28th to the 3rd, of course. But also, so film festivals are, the most important part of them is being able to network. It's all about the community. And what Sundance did that other film festivals haven't done, which was different, was that they were able to create a virtual reality space where all the pass holders were able to convene. And that was titled New Frontier. And it was very exciting. At first, Gabriela and I weren't that keen on it because it was a bit creepy. It was like playing me on the Wii, like the Miis. You had your little avatar.
Yeah.
And at first it was kind of weird because you had your face and your face was your picture. But sometimes if you turned on your webcam, then the picture would turn into your webcam. And it was so strange and bizarre. But once you got used to it, once you actually used it to its extreme and like you actually interacted with people, it was fun.
It was. I have a friend that called it Club Penguin for cinephiles.
So true.
And it was the funniest thing I had ever heard. But yeah, at first, when I entered New Frontier the first time, I was so creeped out because I was like, this is weird. And then I accidentally entered a chat and I didn't know that it was speaking. I thought it was just writing in a chat. But no, it was actually like, you know, you're talking to people. And my social anxiety kicked in and I left and I didn't go back in there because that freaked me out. But you know, then when Josie and I decided to enter this virtual world together, it was actually, you know, more fun because I had someone with me and we actually found some of the critics that we met on Twitter and we were able to talk to them. And, you know, we also met, you know, some people that worked on the films that were presented at Sundance. So that was really, really cool, too. So I do agree that this was one of the best parts of the festival because it kept that community aspect in the film, you know, in the festival, despite, you know, people not being able to travel and being scattered all over the world and in their houses. So yes, I ended up really, really liking New Frontier. It grew on me. And when it shut down, I was very, very sad.
Yeah, we were able to do karaoke with people from the films. We were also able to like go to a virtual bar with some people that actually were running the festival. So that was also very nice. And it was just a good added bonus because film festivals are fun in terms of like watching the films. That's always great. But the main part of the festival is the community and being able to meet people and talk with them and just discuss the craft. And it feels a little sad when all you can do is just watch the film and be like, yes, I liked it. I'm going to log it on Letterboxd and hopefully somebody replies. So that was nice being able to actually talk with people about the films you just watched.
Yes, but that karaoke machine, oh my goodness. How many times did we go in that karaoke machine? We sang Dancing Queen like 15 times.
clearly the next part of this episode was going to be our experience. And as you can see, it was a good experience. It was also very interesting how we were able to watch 33 films in 7 days.
Oh my God. Listen, we slept a collective of 12 hours in 7 days. We have not slept since January the 20th. Because, you know, obviously we have this opportunity to watch so many incredible films that we don't know if or when they are going to be, you know, released to a wider audience. So we have, we must take advantage of this. So, you know, there was the schedule. We were like, okay, I have a break between this film and this one. Time for a power nap. Time to go grab something to eat and go back and lock myself in my room and continue watching films. So that, and honestly, I loved it. It was exhausting. Like, I'm not going to lie. By day five, I was exhausted. You know, I was falling asleep at like 2 in the afternoon. But it was so worth it because, you know, we got to see so many films. And, you know, I feel inspired creatively in a way, you know, seeing these films. You know, they're most of them debut films by new upcoming filmmakers. And, you know, you can't help but feel inspired that, you know, hey, they made it. They made this film. They poured their heart and soul into this project and they made it to Sundance. You know, I was just very happy to just be able to witness their work, even if by the end I didn't like it. I just felt very lucky to be able to witness it and be happy for them to making it to Sundance. So yes, to me, it was a very fulfilling experience.
Yeah, another part of that was the coverage itself, because again, we were invited as press. So we had to watch the films. At least in my case, I would log them into Letterboxd as soon as the embargo was over. It was curating our Instagram, so it was visually pleasing because that's what Instagram stands for, and like actually being able to highlight these wonderful films. And also like updating our Twitter and the Twitter threads on both our personal accounts and on the Film Posers account, and writing reviews as well as guest starring on other podcasts to collaborate during the festival. So it was definitely some like 7 crazy days.
Yeah. Honestly, give love to our Twitter thread, please. We worked hard on it.
Give love to your critics. If you have a favorite critic, please show them how much you appreciate them, because all the hard work that goes into actually covering these events is not like it is a lot of work.
It is. And like, we were updating, you know, on our social medias and, you know, posting like highlights of the films that we like. But some critics, props to them, because they were posting podcast episodes every day. So major props to them, because I think I would have collapsed.
Yeah, we were also uploading YouTube reviews to our YouTube channel, which props to Anna for editing those videos and making the thumbnails, because Anna, she rocks.
Thank you, Anna.
I just want to say, we talked about this before the podcast started, but why is it John and the Hole the most viewed YouTube video on our channel? I'm sorry. Okay, I didn't saw John and the Hole, but after the movie finished, apparently there was a lot of bad reviews. A lot of bad reviews.
There were mixed reviews, I would say. Because I definitely met some people that liked it.
Really? I don't know. Yeah. It was just my timeline.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. But I met some people that
and I are on the same timeline. I saw mixed reviews too. And I was like, yeah, huh.
I mean, I saw from everything. I saw people that hated it, some people that felt indifferent about it, and some people that liked it. I saw a bunch of reactions on my timeline. So, yeah. But also, I agree.
Also, props to Gabriela for her IGTV reviews.
We love that.
I'm giving the snaps here. The snaps here. We got for Anna and for Gabriela and Josie.
But I really did enjoy editing the videos. It was a good experience.
I love how, you know, when Josie and I would record them, we would just be like, Anna, we're so sorry that you have to see this chaos right now. We would just leave little messages to her.
But also,
it was cute, and I was like,
yeah. But also, again, props to Anna because Adok Perre reused our thumbnail as promotional art.
Man, when I saw that tag, I was like, first of all, thank you for tagging me. I mean, tagging us, the film posters, because obviously if they wouldn't, it wouldn't be stealing.
Yes.
We don't condone that. No. But no, I was happy that they used it and they liked it. I kind of want to know how, like, it worked with the networking. So do you guys, like, when you see the me, I'm just going to call it me characters. Mm-hmm. When you guys saw the me characters, do you, like, click on them and they start, like, a little chat between
you? Yeah. How does basically, it work? When you entered New Frontier to the area called Film Party, because there were two, there was Film Party, then there was a gallery where you could watch, like, the projects that they had made that required the VR headset. And on gallery was where you also access, you know, the karaoke and the restaurant and all of that. So when you go into Film Party, there is a list where you click on attendees and you can see, like, everyone who is currently at Film Party. And, you know, it has, like, their picture, their name, and most of them have listed, you know, what they are or, you know, where they're from. So if there was someone from one of the films, like, they had a, you know, producer, you know, whatever film. And so, you know, if you were close to them, you could click, you know, on, would you like to enter the chat box? And you, if you click yes, that it would form a bubble. Mm-hmm. It would be talking to that person. And, you know, more people could join or not. But, yeah, it was really, really cool. And also, like, you can... You don't have, because Josie said I turned on the web camera, you know, it showed you, but you could always, like, have it turned off and it was just, like, the picture of you, which was what most people did because, you know, obviously we're all in our rooms, in our house. We're not camera ready.
Yeah, a lot of people had their webcams on and I was like, you brave people. My social anxiety would never.
Shout out to the director of Mass that had his webcam on. Also, Anna, I forgot to tell you. Edgar Wright was at Film Party.
Did you guys party with Edgar Wright?
No. I didn't. I heard what happened. Apparently, you know, people found out that he was in it. So, it all, like, Film Party almost crashed because he created chaos. And it was like, oh my God, Edgar Wright. And so many, and it was because I was in Film Party like a couple of minutes before that happened. So maybe I was there when he was there. I just didn't find him. But it was chaos at Film Party when Edgar Wright was
there.
So
you're saying that you were almost at the room where it happened?
Almost, yes.
That is such a stunt.
Honestly.
I just partied with Edgar Wright. And what about you? What
did also, you do? I also was at karaoke with one of the actors of one of the films. So that was pretty random.
Oh, my other question was about the viewing experiences. Like you had mentioned, you had to see the films from home. And sometimes... some films transfer well when it comes to distributing online. I was wondering how your experience was watching the films from your own home, you know, virtually instead of, like, was it similar to how it went at SCAD?
So, to me, it ran pretty smoothly. What I do commend Sundance that it did much better than SCAD was that it had closed captioning for everything. You had the option of removing them if you didn't want closed caption, but, you know, every single film had closed captions. And overall, it ran pretty smoothly. There was, like, I think it was, you know, it was the first day, so I'm pretty sure that's why it happened when the premiere for Coda happened. It crashed. You know, when the film was supposed to load, it just loaded and said error. And Josie and I were in a critics chat. And everyone was freaking out. Everyone was like, is Coda loading for anyone? And it was like fairly quick. Basically, we hit like refresh the page and worked fine after that. But other than that, I really didn't have any problems with the platform. But, you know, there were some technical problems that happened. But it was by Tuesday, which was technically like the last full day. Because as press, we were given 10 tokens for on demand for any film that we might have missed the premiere for. And it was a problem on Sunday. So by Monday, they had emailed us and said that they were restarting the tokens for everyone due to what had happened on Sunday, which I didn't experience, but many people did. So they restarted it on Monday, which was great. It felt like a new beginning because I already used up five. But then by Tuesday, it said that all my tokens had been used up. I could only watch, you know, what were second screenings available for certain films. So there was a film that I missed that I planned on seeing on demand. But honestly, that was the only thing that happened. And you know what? It was fine. You know, it was the last day. So the fact that it took that long for there to be a technical problem, you know, props to them. And I'm really not upset about it. But, you know, it was something that happened. But, you know, it really wasn't that big of a deal at the end of the day.
Well, for me, it was more or less the same as Gabriela. I will say that, of course, it's easier to get distracted when you're watching it at your home versus in a theater. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure the experience would have been heightened a lot better with, like, better sound and a bigger screen and just being surrounded by people. That's always going to be a factor to take into consideration, because mm-hmm. that's what makes the viewing process so much fun. That's why we love movies and why we love going to the movies. But still, I had fun. We only did this once because it was a bit distracting, but it did enhance the experience a bit, which was for Coda. Gabriela and I called each other on FaceTime and we like had our phones set aside and while we were watching the movie, and at times like we could hear each other reacting to certain moments. So that was nice being able to have that reaction from someone else at the same time. Yeah, I would say that I think they did a good job for this being their first virtual film festival. They were very understanding and they were very proactive and they were listening to everybody's concerns as well as being very patient, and their support team was very quick, at least. I never contacted them, but I heard from people that did and the responses were good. And of course, the reset of the tokens was really helpful because there were some problems with the on-demand screenings versus the public second screenings. Other than that, I think it was good. I think it was well handled. And of course, being able, like, the satellite screenings in Puerto Rico and a lot of people being able to attend, that was nice too.
And also, I loved how at the beginning of every film, you know, the director of the film introduced it. And then it went to a montage of indigenous people talking about the ancestral lands that are in Utah. Yeah. And that was also really, really cool. I really liked that.
Yeah, definitely. They really try to capture the blueprint of what makes a physical film festival good, and they reproduced it onto a virtual setting. And while it's not the same, it still gave you that warm feeling of, like, I'm at a film festival. And sometimes being able to watch these films, even I was feeling like, wow, I'm being able to watch these films as press. Which was really good, especially, like, again, as we said, for our SCAD recap episode. Props to us. Because we did that.
But, yeah, also, I missed the little music that would play every time a film was going to start.
Cumbia.
I miss it. I listen. It was good. It was like, yeah, I miss it.
Yo, I love it.
Yeah, I have one final question that I think me and Anna had the same question, which was, having experienced the first Sundance Virtual Festival, how do you think you would have handled, or how do you think everyone else could have handled, a physical in-person festival? Would you have been able to see as many films, or do you think it would have been hard and you would have had to pick and choose and make really tough calls?
No.
No way.
No, I wouldn't. We were talking about this on New Frontier with other filmmakers and critics. It would have been so difficult. And I think it's physically impossible to be able to watch 30 to 50 films in person, which is a little sad because that's the positive. We were able to see so many films that we'll be able to promote and see who acquires them and see where they go. So that's like, it's like seeing your child grow up and go to school. That's how I feel right now with these movies. But if we were in person, it would have been so much more difficult, because one thing that I mentioned one night was, at least in Savannah, when I'd go to the physical film festival, there were times when we would head over to a film and we were so excited to watch it, but we were so tired from running from another screening that we'd just be like, anyone want to get something to eat? So it's also a matter of that self-care. Taking care of yourself is very important during a festival, whether it's virtual or physical. And I think it was easier to be able to play the film at times and have something to eat. So it definitely makes it easier in that aspect. It would have been more difficult in person.
Yeah, for sure. I was talking about this with another person that I met at the festival who mentioned that, you know, asked me if I had gone to the midnight screenings. And I said yes, that I had been able to pretty much go to all of the ones that I wanted. And he mentioned that he had gone to Sundance, you know, in person previously. And he mentioned how it's very difficult to make the midnight screenings in person because most people, you know, stay outside of Park City and they have to, you know, catch the bus or drive back to where they're staying, so that it's very hard to go to those unless you're staying in Park City. So that he was very happy that he was able to go to the midnight screenings, you know, from his home, because that's something that he normally can't do at Sundance. And I agree. Obviously, like Josie said, you know, most times we would be watching a film and it would end and we would just close that tab and go press play on another one. That's something that you can't do in person. You know, it mostly is like it ends and you have to run to the other theater. So you're just like, oh my God, I have a minute left. Press play. So, you know, that part is, you know, I'm very grateful for, because that's something that just, it's going to be impossible to accomplish going to Sundance in person, even though it is something that I hope to do one day. I want to experience the festival in person one day, but, you know, but I also recognize that what I accomplish now would be much more difficult to do in person.
Honestly, I'm glad you both had the experience as press members. Hopefully one day we're all able to go in person as press, the four of us are able to.
Yes, the film posters at Park City, Utah, watch out, Sundance, we're coming.
They're not ready. Honestly, they're not ready.
I remember Josie and I were talking about how she would probably be the one dragging me through the snow. Because I would fall from running.
Okay, so the moment everyone has been waiting for. Yes. Which films did we see? What were our reactions? And what were our top five films from Sundance 2021? I'm going to start with my 33rd film, which was Crypto Zoo. I don't have much to say about this film because I did not finish it. And I feel really bad because honestly, the animation was really good. But there was violence against a unicorn. And if you've seen it, you know. And I'm sorry, I couldn't get past it.
Yeah, but what kind of movie was that?
It was very trippy. It was a very trippy film. I'm sorry, I couldn't finish it. I was like, it's one of those things that we were talking about again. You have just a certain amount of time to be able to watch everything. And if something doesn't resonate with you, then you just quote unquote walk out and go to another film.
So I'm going to go in chronological order, you know, starting from the first one to the last one.
No, from the top, make it drop. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. So my first Sundance film was actually Coda, directed by Sean Heather. And this was one of my anticipated premieres from the festival. And I absolutely loved it. Loved every minute of it. It won the Grand Jury Prize as it deserved. And so since it won the awards, you know, you could screen them for an extra day with the award winner passes. So I decided to close out Sundance by rewatching it. And it was the best way to end the festival.
Yeah, cool. That was the hot name out of Sundance. Like, it got picked up by Apple TV Plus for like, what, $25
million? $25 million. Yes, it's the biggest deal ever done at Sundance.
That's amazing.
And they deserve it, honestly. It's an incredible film.
Yeah, didn't they like won three awards?
Yeah, they won the audience award, the grand jury award, and director and ensemble for the cast.
Oh, that was a sweep.
It was a sweep. Everyone was like, damn, Coda really did that. Like, it wasn't surprising, but at the same time, damn, they really did that.
Yeah, there are a few people upset because it is an absurdly large amount of money for a film. But also, my take on this is that it is a film about the deaf community, and we rarely see these stories, and it was a beautiful story at that. So I'm just glad I got it home. I'm glad more people are going to be able to experience it. It is a beautiful film that had me in tears and had Gabriella in tears. We were just staring at each other in our face.
Ugly cry. Face,
like, are you okay? No. Are you okay? No.
Yeah.
So it ugly is a film that, crying. Yeah, it is a film that I'm pretty sure will bring a sense of community for film lovers.
Based on that deal, that's definitely one of the ones that people need to keep an eye out for.
So the next film I'm going to mention is John on the Hole, which we actually reviewed for our YouTube channel. So if you'd like to check that one out, I would recommend going over there. It is our, as Anna mentioned, it is our most viewed YouTube video yet. So I guess check that out if you're interested.
My next film is the second one I watched, which was One for the Road. It competed in the world cinema because it is a Thailandese film, and I really loved the beginning of it. I loved the style of the director, you know. I love the chemistry between the actors, but my main problem with this film is that it was too long. It was over 2 hours long. It really did not need to be that long, because by the end it was just dragging, you know. I felt like they were dragging this storyline, you know, too much. And it was sad because I love the ending. I thought it had a perfect ending, but I feel like it would have impacted me more had the film been shorter.
The directing is basically candy for cinephiles. It's so original. It's breathtaking at certain points, and you can tell that the director truly has a talent for working camera and capturing visuals. But it was a tad long, and I'm very picky with my pacing, and it felt a little slow. It felt like two different films in one.
I agree. Which was sad because I really thought this was going to be one of my top from the festival based on the premise.
So my next film that I watched was First Date. And I was looking forward to this one, and I'm very disappointed that I was not a fan. I think, Gabriela, did you watch it?
Yes, I did. It was also one of the last films I watched, and I agree with you. I was not a fan. I thought it started out strong, but I think it was the same thing that happened with One for the Road, that I tried to mix all of these different storylines, and it was a comedy, but I think it failed into making it interesting because it just felt very convoluted and honestly kind of lost like the funny part of it along the way.
I think the problem with this film is that it was combining a lot of genres.
That's a shame, because I actually had that in one of the films I was anticipating, because it was kind of giving me like Superbad plus Booksmart plus The First Date, on a first date. And I'm like, oh, that could be interesting.
Yeah, I really felt like that's what they were going for, but it didn't nail it.
My next film was Censor, which was also my first midnight screening. But it wasn't midnight for us. It was 1 a.m. So Josie also saw this one. And we were, you know, kind of nervous because it was a horror film. And unlike Anna, who doesn't get scared and can tolerate pretty much anything, Josie and I are scaredy cats. So we were nervous because it was 1 a.m. And, you know. But, you know, it was a very interesting film, I have to admit. And even though the ending was confusing, but again, I think it's also due how I was so tired that I'm pretty sure I missed some things. But overall, it was a very interesting film, and I hope someone picks it up because I need to rewatch it, honestly. I need to rewatch it because I didn't get some things, even though Josie kind of understood some of it and explained it to me.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but when I read the synopsis, it was about this woman that she criticizes film, but specialized in video nasties.
Yeah, she censors them. Genre. Yeah, like she watches like those films and then says, oh, you need to cut this out from the film. You know, she censors films.
And how do you think that worked out? Like,
I mean, I definitely liked that aspect of the film. So yeah, that aspect worked really, really well for the film. The plot is definitely interesting because, you know, we see this woman who works in this, and she sees horrible things in these films, and she starts to think that those films, you know, reveal the truth of what happened to her sister. So I definitely thought that the plot of it was very interesting. But also, again, I do need to rewatch it, because I'm pretty sure there were some things that I did not catch because I was so tired. It was, you know, 1 a.m. and almost 3 when it ended. So it's something that I need to rewatch. But what I did see and what I, you know, what I did see and understand, I liked. So Anna, you will definitely like this film.
I'll add it on my watch list.
Yes. And it's also directed by a woman, so we love women directing horror. Like Anna one day will be manifesting.
Yes, I just want to say that this film belongs in the Good for Her universe. I think it would do very well. I love the ending. I loved it.
It was a good ending.
Do you think, who will pick it up? Because when the movie premiered, people were saying that Shudder was going to pick it up.
I think it would be a good match with Shudder, but also it has an A24 aesthetic. But also there is a lot of negotiating happening behind the scenes. We're just not hearing about it because the bidding wars are so, they're getting a little bit, they're being very competitive. There are a lot of people trying to buy stuff. So like, for example, Passing was going through it, and I'm pretty sure that, like, don't take a black and white film away from Netflix.
I also heard that Neon would have been a good choice for Censor.
So listen, those are the top three. Yeah. Like Neon, A24, or Shudder.
Shudder.
Because Censor,
yeah, for sure.
Censor has a universal aesthetic when it comes to those three companies, and it would fit well with their filmography. Okay, so my next film is Jockey, because we already talked about Censor, so I'm jumping to Jockey. And the way that I described this was the Oscar nominee in 2022 that's considered the dad film. It's gonna be nominated for an Oscar in 2022 award season, and it's gonna be loved by all the dads.
It is a dad movie, and I loved it. Okay, and it's funny that you say it's a dad movie, because I finished it and I called my dad and said, "Hey, I watched this film. I think you're gonna like it." So, can confirm it is a dad movie, but it was really good. I really liked it. So, I'm a root for Jockey.
I'm just waiting for it to be at the 2022 Oscars, and I'm gonna come back to this episode and be like, I told you! It has the perfect formula for an Oscar film. I'm not even joking.
My next film is a one that is loved by all the posers, and that is Rita Moreno, just a girl who decided to go for it. Now, we have a review up on our YouTube channel. Josie and I are in it, but we were sent a screener for this film. So Anna and Juan were also able to watch it. So now they can share their thoughts. So Anna, Juan, what are your thoughts on this film? Because obviously Josie and I pretty much shared everything on our review on our YouTube channel. Please watch it. Please make sure it's more viewed than John in the Hole. Please. Thank you.
So when I saw the screener, I actually was very interested in watching this. It was actually on my list of films that if I were able to attend, this is probably in my top. I really hope this finds a home. I think this documentary is a really, really good movie. I think it's a one-of-a-kind documentary that celebrates an icon, and it's such an intimate and special film that inspires, moves, and shines a light on Moreno's activism, prejudice, triumphs, and struggles, and, like, so much more. It even addresses stuff that normally people would try to erase or not even bother to shed a light on, but that's not Rita's style. She definitely wants to address things her way, and I commend her for that. I think this documentary was really well done. I would like to see this at the 2022 Best Documentary, hopefully manifesting if it gets a home. I kind of see this on Netflix, but hear me out, Fox Searchlight Film, I feel like that could also pick it up.
I think it's between Netflix and HBO.
I just want to make sure it gets the right home and then gives it the proper campaign, because I think this could go far. I think this is going to resonate with a lot of people. And definitely, if you're a Rita Moreno fan, this has to be on your watch list. Like, for sure.
So, I'll be honest. I don't know. I didn't know much about Rita Moreno other than One Day at a Time and West Side Story. So, seeing this documentary, I was honestly shocked. Like, the hardship that she went through to be able to work in Hollywood, to work as a Latina woman in Hollywood. And it's really inspiring watching this documentary, and I like how intimate it is. Trigger warning, it does talk about sexual assault in detail, so if you're affected by it, please do not watch it. But yeah, I really love this documentary. So I was expecting, like, when I saw that we got the screener, I was so excited. And it is great. Another thing that I want to highlight that I really loved was the animation. So they used stop motion animation. And I really love how they did old school, like, 80s toys to, like, tell the story. And I really like how she, even though she doesn't, like, live here, she, like, is still a Boricua de corazón. And we can see it in the documentary. And another interesting thing that we saw was how, even though, like, she didn't want to take the roles, but she had to do it to able to survive. And I thought it was, yeah, it was a very, like, sensible subject, but I thought the documentary handled it well.
Yeah, because they got to Puerto Rico and they got to New York and they didn't have anything. And even Rita admits that she was the sole income for her mother and herself. So she really didn't have an option during that time.
In conclusion, much love to Rita.
Mm-hmm. So the next film I wanted to talk about was Mabel, My Beauty. So Mabel, My Beauty follows a couple that is married living in France. And they used to be in a polyamorous relationship. And that other person that was in the relationship visits them at France after this woman has gone through some hardships, and they all try to reconnect. And it's just a lot of drama. There's that good kind of drama. I did like the film. It was beautiful visually, and it was very engaging. The only problem for me was that while the music was really good, and I did love the music, and a lot of people are very fond of the score within this film, there were times when the music did not go with the scene, especially during the end. I would have to watch the film again. So I hope that I am able to in the future.
So my next film is I Was a Simple Man. So I honestly watched this one because Josie watched it and really, really liked it. And so I decided, okay, why not? So there was still, I was able to jump into it after the premiere, which was something that you were able to do for some films. So I jumped into the premiere, and I am sad to say I was disappointed. You know, not because in the technical aspect, it was beautifully directed. I can't complain about the directing. It looked absolutely beautiful, but oh my god, this film was so slow. But one thing I did really love about this film is that they present the moment where Hawaii became a US state and the impact of it. And I had never seen that discussed in a film previously. So I really liked how they incorporated that into the film and, you know, the negative effects that it has had on the island. So I really liked that about the film. But overall, it was just too slow for my taste.
The next film I'm going to talk about is Coming Home in the Dark, which Gabriela absolutely ate up.
Listen. Okay, you start. I finish.
It's a wild ride, literally, because it is kind of a road trip film, but it's a dark road trip film. It's very gory. It is just, I was so confused. I did not understand the motives.
So it was a midnight premiere. We were tired, but I had taken a power nap, so I was ready. And honestly, I kept laughing because when the director introduced the film, he was like, this is not for the faint of heart. And it had like a warning of, oh, this movie contains gore and all of that. So I go into this film thinking, oh, it's going to rain blood, if that's what you're telling me. So it starts, and it's a very shocking film. They do something, you know, within the first like 20 minutes that was very shocking. And it is very violent, but I've seen worse. So I don't know what that says about me. But anyways, I really like this film. I was not expecting to like it as much as I did. But the one thing that does frustrate me is kind of like the motives aren't explained that clearly. It leaves a lot open to interpretation, which for this type of film, I feel like it didn't need to be left to interpretation. It just needed to, you know, be fully explained. Because it's not a film that, you know, is needs to end on an ambiguous note. It needed to have like the full conclusion. And
yeah, that was my thing. I like the film. I just think I needed a little bit more explanation. Because you don't have to over-explain your film, but at least give enough for the audience to understand where you're going. Because it was open to interpretation, and it came to the point where I thought one thing was happening and then Gabriela thought it was another thing. And it's one of those moments where I don't think it's supposed to be either or. I think it's supposed to be one thing. But again, that's just, maybe it was on purpose. I think it's a fault of the film. But because a lot of things happened that I did not understand why they were happening. And then they're teasing it throughout the film. And then in the end, you don't get an answer. And it's like, you made me go through all of this trauma for nothing.
Yeah. But honestly, the one thing that we all agree is that Daniel Gillies killed it in that role. I mean, he literally killed, but he also killed it in terms that he... he was absolutely fantastic. You know, I don't know his name in the film. I just kept calling him Elijah Michelson because, you know, I'm Vampire Diaries trash. His
name in the film is Mandrake.
Thank you. I just kept calling him Elijah. He was great. He was so terrifying. Oh, it was terrifying, but I loved it. The next film I have, it's John and the Hole, but we've already discussed it. So we're going to be talking about In the Earth. Okay, so this film is actually going to be distributed by Neon. So it will be released, hopefully, at some point this year. So I was very excited for this. You know, it had a very interesting premise. And one thing I found out is that it was actually filmed, you know, during COVID. I went to this film thinking that it was going to be one thing, but it ended up being something completely different. And it's not like it was a bad thing, but it was the way that it was handled. Because at first, it's said to be like a survival movie that these scientists have to go to a lab in the woods. Because there's a pandemic going on, ironically, and they're going to that lab to, you know, be able to cure it and find the cure and all of that. And then that is just like left behind. And it starts being a completely different thing. And I was like, okay, if this ends up being a monster movie, I'm going to be happy because I love monster movies. But it didn't end up being a monster movie. It just ended up being a complete mess that I thought it tried to be Annihilation. But, you know, Annihilation is so great. And this film, you know, did not manage to be what Annihilation is. And it ended up being messy. And just, there's like a complete scene that's just strobe lights. And it honestly gave me a headache.
So the next film I'm going to mention is Knocking, which we both saw, which was a midnight premiere. And this one was actually surprisingly really good. It was very interesting how they handled like psychology as a thriller.
Yeah, it was very well done. Strawberry Mansion, which Josie loved. So I watched it because she loved it, and she kept saying, watch Strawberry Mansion, and I decided to watch it. And I liked it. I definitely didn't like it as much as Josie did, but I definitely liked it. It was a trip.
I love Strawberry Mansion. I don't know what that says about me because it's so far out. It's so far out, dude. Weird.
It's so weird.
Yes, I'm actually going to plug in my review. I actually reviewed Strawberry Mansion. I was a simple man in Coda for Full Circle Cinema. So if you'd like to hear more about my thoughts on that film, I recommend you head on over there. But I really love Strawberry Mansion, not going to lie. So the next film I'm going to mention is Mayday, which we actually, Gabriela, reviewed for our Instagram TV. So please head on over there where we did a lot of Sundance coverage on our Instagram, as we've mentioned before. So please head on over there. We both really like the film.
So my next film is The Pink Cloud. And I was really looking forward to this film. And at the beginning of this film, they actually put a warning and they said this film was filmed in 2019. So, you know, if any similarity to real life is just a coincidence, because this film is about a pink cloud that descends on the world and sends everyone into an eternal quarantine.
It hit hard.
I'm not gonna lie, it hit hard.
There were a lot of films that dealt with pandemics and quarantine, and especially the next one I'm gonna mention. And it's very interesting because these films were made beforehand. So the next film I'm gonna mention is El Perro Que No Calla, which dealt a lot with, it was a slice of life, but it also had because the premise says that there's an impending apocalypse, but you're always waiting for it. And then when it comes, it felt more like a pandemic. So that's another film that rings true to the times. So I hope this one gets distributed and picked up and like more people can watch it, because it was very interesting.
I watched it too, and I agree with Josie. I love how they also incorporated animation for certain scenes. I thought that was very interesting, and it went really well with the tone of the film, even though it was kind of very confusing at times. So my next film is On the Count of Three, which was one of the highlights of the festival. Everyone was talking about it. It is such a good film. You know, it had no right to be that funny because it does deal with, you know, very dark subject matter. And it ended up being such a funny film that you kind of feel bad for laughing. But, you know, it had incredible performances and a lot of social commentary that, you know, needs to be said. So yes, look out for On the Count of Three when it is distributed, hopefully.
I was going to ask that because I saw in my timeline that they were comparing it with Safdie Brother films because of the subject and how the pacing and the tension. So I just want to know, like, is it true?
Yes, but also it didn't give me as much anxiety as a Safdie Brothers film. But, you know, it was definitely intentional at some points. But also, I think the comparison also comes due to the fact that Christopher Abbott's character looks exactly like Robert Pattinson in Good Time. And that was just what everyone kept saying. So I think it's also mostly due to that. But definitely it has some Safdie Brother vibes in that film. So yes, I do think you're going to really like this film, Anna.
So the next film I'm going to mention is Marvelous in the Black Hole, which is it's a magical coming-of-age story. And there were times that I was confused with where they were heading, but it resonates with a lot of people. It resonated with me at certain times. I love the intention of the story. I love the performances. And I really hope it gets picked up.
I watched it too, and I was not a fan, honestly. I just really didn't resonate with me at all. I was kind of bored, honestly. So my next film is Passing, which y'all know was my most anticipated of the festival because, you know, I love the book, I love the story, and I was so excited to see it brought to life. And we have a review up on our YouTube channel, so you can hear me say how much I love this film every 5 seconds in there. And Netflix picked it up, so it will be on Netflix at some point this year, which I am so excited about, and I am ready to be screaming about this film for the next year.
Gabriela will be running its awards campaign.
Thank you. Yes, I will.
So the next film I'm going to mention is Primetime, which was, that one felt more like kind of like a Safdie Brothers film. And I'm just going to say that is a good film, and I hope more people are able to watch it.
My next film is 8 for Silver, which I did an IGTV review of. It will hopefully be up by the time this you're listening to this episode. But yes, it was a werewolf movie, which Josie, I watched it because Josie said, oh, I think this is a werewolf movie. And I went, I'm in.
So the next film that I'm going to mention is our hashtag J, which is a Romeo and Juliet retelling.
Yay.
Through social media and basically an iPhone. However, it was filmed on camera, not on an iPhone. They manipulated the footage to look like iPhone. I feel betrayed.
We were betrayed.
Yeah, the only thing I want to shout out about this film at this moment is that the composer is Puerto Rican. So shout out to René.
I actually really love this film. I had such a fun time watching it. And if you want to hear more about my in-depth thoughts, I was actually a guest on the Movie Marathoners podcast. So you can listen to my full thoughts there.
So the thing about our hashtag J is that I think it would fit very well with Netflix. So we'll see what the future holds for it. The only thing that we'll say is that it is a film that unfortunately it will resonate with some people. Some people are not going to like it. It's going to be a little bit divisive, but it's very creative. And I hope you take a chance on it because it deals a lot with culture as much as it does with the Shakespearean retelling aspect of it.
So the next one I'm going to mention is Coming Home in the Dark, which we already discussed, but I forgot to mention that I was a guest on Cinemania World podcast as well, talking about Coming Home in the Dark. So if you want to listen to my more in-depth thoughts of this film, go ahead over there. Now, the real film is actually Mass, which I have an IGTV review on that you can check out on our Instagram page right now. So long story short, I saw this film because it had a lot of hype after its premiere. So I watched it the day after, and I am so glad I did. This film is very powerful, very impactful, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw it at the 2022 Oscars. Honestly, it's definitely got some great performances in it.
The next film I'm going to mention is Prisoners of the Ghostland. I'm not the biggest fan, but I do appreciate what it was trying to do. It's a perfect mix of Eastern and Western culture, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people are going to love it.
Yes, I did. I also watched Prisoners of the Ghostland, and I loved it. So,
yes, on a scale of 1 to 11, how unhinged was my man, Nick Cage?
9.
He's Anna's man.
We can share. Nicolas Cage at Stan
He was very unhinged, even though my favorite unhinged Cage is on Face Off, which I know so many people will be like, why? I have my reasons, but I think he was very unhinged in Prisoners of the Ghostland, and it is going to be a film that unhinged Cage fans will definitely love.
Love that.
We'd love to see it.
My next film is actually The Blazing World, which I'm just going to let Juan take the lead.
So, this was my most anticipated film of the entire Sundance Festival. I was going to buy a ticket for the first night, but I'll be completely honest, I was not giving up the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. So I bought a ticket for the second screening. And before seeing this film, I saw the short film that was on Amazon Prime Video, which also debuted in Sundance in 2018. And I saw an interview that the director, writer, and lead, Carlson Young, did on YouTube discussing the film before watching it. I adored this film. I thought this was visually stunning. Like, it's beautiful. Like, the minute you see that red image, I saw the red image that was posted on the Sundance page, you know, advertising it. And I said, I'm in. And then I saw Carlson Young was there and I was like, I'm in times two. If you know me, you know I love Scream, the MTV series. Carlson Young is from there. She was Brooke. So I thought this movie was great. I thought I was super excited to see it. It delivered. The acting was great. The dialogue in this film was actually really strong. One of the lines that resonated with me was mentioned by Udo Kier. And he said, I am the darkest tree in the forest of light. And that hits when you think about it. This film is a great film not only to watch, it also is a great movie to analyze because it sticks with you afterwards. It's not going to be for everyone. I'm aware of this. but I'm still going to defend this film. I would call this a twisted version of Alice in Wonderland mixed with Pan's Labyrinth, mixed with a touch of Sofia Coppola, because I definitely had that vibe going in there. And this film was also filmed during the pandemic, which I think is amazing. They did it safely. They talked about it in the Q&A. The film touches on grappling with depression and the inward journey that one faces to overcome such a force. Trigger warning, when it comes to self-harm, there are like one or two instances where it is very tense. So if that is something that could trigger you, fair warning. Also, the score in this movie, wow, like really well done. Like that, the way they use classical music and a touch of Baroque music to kind of play up the tension was so well done. I could go on about this movie for like 30 minutes easily. So I'm just going to say, I really hope they pick this movie up. It has an A24 or Neon type of feel. So I hope one of them picks it up. I'll be happy with whoever picks it up. I just want to see it again because, again, I love this film. I will defend this film. It's not going to be for everyone. You know how I didn't like Hereditary, but a lot of people did? Same thing, but backwards. I love this, and a lot of people aren't probably going to live for it as much, but I actually feel this is going to find an audience. I have this feeling. I'm marking my words. And Carlson Young, one to watch. Mark my words. She is going to do amazing things. I know it. And if this is just her debut film, imagine with more experience. Oh, I'm gonna.
I thought I was gonna really like it, but yo soy la nota discordante in the posers. I was not a big fan. I just thought it was a lot of showing. And look how pretty this is. Look how creepy this visual is. And there's no story. So that was my main problem. I was bored, honestly. I got tired of looking at the pretty things. I wanted something else to be happening. But, you know, like Juan said, it's not going to be for everyone. So sadly, it wasn't for me.
So the next film I wanted to mention was Amy Tan, Unintended Memoir. And I watched so many documentaries at Sundance, and the documentaries were actually some of the best films at Sundance. So the only thing I'm going to say is that the animation is really good in this documentary. The story is really good. I learned so much about her life that I didn't know before. And I even think Anna would have appreciated the animation because it was really nice.
So my next film is World Going to the World's Fair.
Who was interested in watching that?
Listen, I have a question. Because a lot of people are talking about it, and they told that it's a creepypasta story, and I just want to know how.
It's again, very creepy. There is no pasta, but it's very creepy. I'm just
joking. I am a coward. I watched, like, Josie likes to say, I watched 35% of the film because I was so scared that I moved my laptop and my wall watched the movie.
But was it, like, gory, or was it just, like,
no, hella tense? No, it's not gory. It's just it definitely has, like, the ambiance of it is very tense and very creepy. And it has some very creepy, like, visuals. And it makes you feel so uncomfortable the entire time that you get scared.
So the thing that's done really well during this film is the use of atmosphere and suspense. So it's definitely one of those types of horror films. You know, a film has the potential to be very scary when even Anna looks at the premise and says, I don't know, man, that sounds kind of creepy.
I just want to say that the director, Jane Schoenbrunn, they created such a creepy film and they had such a kind soul. Like when they introduced the film, you know, they kept saying, you know, this is like my work. From the bottom of my heart, I want people to like this film. I want people to experience it. And I just was sitting there like, oh my God, I don't want to let you down. Like, and honestly, I did like the film. It was just so creepy.
So the next film I'm going to mention is Rebel Hearts, which I will not go into detail because I actually reviewed it for Shuffle Online. So please head on over there and check out my thoughts.
So my next film is Together Together. Which, not gonna lie, after watching so many creepy, dark, and depressing films for like 4 days straight, watching Together Together, which was a very lighthearted drama comedy, was exactly what my heart needed. And I really enjoyed this film.
So the next film I'm gonna mention is Night of the Kings, which is actually running for this year's award season. So if you can check that out. Yes.
I would highly recommend it.
Yes, I watched it too on Josie's recommendation and I loved it. It was amazing. So yes, very excited to see that this one is running for this year's Academy Awards. So let's go. So my next film is actually another one that I was highly anticipated, and that was Judas and the Black Messiah. Oh my God. This film was incredible. I have so many good things to say about it. I could talk about this for an hour, but to keep it short, it was an incredible film. The performances were absolutely stunning. Absolutely great film, and how it handled, you know, the story. Obviously, it deals with the real life murder of Fred Hampton, who was the leader of the Black Panthers. How it approached this topic, how it was handled, it was just so well done. And I loved this film from beginning to end. Since it started, I knew this was a 5 out of 5 film for me. They actually introduced the Young Lords, which, you know, Boricua. And I loved that. And overall, love this film. It will be available on HBO Max on February 12th. So make sure to check it out. Get it together. Award season. Nominate the talent. Nominate the good films. Get it together. I better see those names at the Academy Awards. Thank you.
The next film I wanted to mention is Hijo de Monarcas, which won the Alfred P. Sloan Award at this year's Sundance. And it was recognized for using science and weaving it into storytelling. And this film has a documentary style and it's perfectly mixed in with fiction, which I thought was effortless and beautiful. It has so many memorable shots. And again, it's just a very visually pleasing film.
Yeah, I agree. I also watched it and I fully agree that it is the very visually pleasing film. But, you know, the story was kind of like very confusing for me, but I still recommend it. It's going to resonate a lot with so many people. So I really, and it's also, you know, waiting to be picked up by distribution. So hopefully we shall get the news soon. So we're rooting for you, Hijos de Monarcas. My next film is Wild Indian. So I watched this one on the last day as well. And I was really drawn to the premise. And it is a beautifully shot film. Incredible performances. But it also suffered from the same thing that happened with I Was a Simple Man, which was, you know, the story structure of it. Even though it does nail the final act. You know, Wild Indian, you know, it's only like, in like the second act that it gets kind of wonky, but overall the first and the third act are pretty decent. And by the time it ended, you know, I was left emotionally shook.
Yeah. The next film that I wanted to mention was Pleasure. It is actually one of my favorite films from Sundance, and it just deals with the porn industry from a female perspective, and the women are never sexualized, which I thought was my mind was blown. I really loved it.
I want to put that on my watch list. That looked really good. It's a shame I missed it.
So the thing that I wanted to mention about that one is that I'm very scared because it is graphic due to the nature of the subject, but it has to be that way. Still, it does treats the women with so much respect, which I don't think it would have been done. Like, Niña did such a good job. My only thing is that because it is graphic, I don't know who's gonna, in the U.S., gonna want to distribute it. That's going to be the tricky part. But I think it's a story that needs to be told because it's a story that is not given that much attention. And a lot of these women suffer from abuse in this industry and they do not receive help because of their line of work, which again, it highlights sex workers and the rights that they, the rights that should be acknowledged.
Yeah, I'm really sad I missed that one, but hopefully it gets picked up. So my next film is The World to Come, which I know I hate myself for watching it too, but I was just curious. So this is basically the American version of Portrait of a Lady on Fire. In conclusion, stan Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Don't bother with this film.
Another documentary. It is Street Gang, How We Got to Sesame Street, which very self-explanatory. It deals with Sesame Street and it talks about a lot of things that I did not know. And it made me feel very nostalgic. And yeah, it's one of my top films from Sundance.
My next film is Misha and the Wolves, which was the other documentary I watched. Unlike Josie, I didn't watch that many documentaries. But Misha and the Wolves was what it was actually picked up by Netflix. So be on the lookout for this one, because this documentary was very interesting. Basically, it's about this woman who survived the Holocaust with wolves. So she was in the woods and she survived due to wolves. And then years later, the real truth is uncovered. So it was definitely a wild ride. Like, I can't believe this isn't a work of fiction and it is actually like a real life story. It was wild. So I definitely recommend it. Be on the lookout when it hits Netflix.
So I really wanted to mention Flea. I also watched Flea and Gabriella also got to see it. It is a very...
I loved Flea.
It is a very touching film that explores a very unique story through innovative animation.
Yes, I love the Flea. I just love that it is a documentary, but it is animated to protect the identity of the person the documentary is about, which I thought was brilliant. And I was so invested in this story. I was so heartbroken by it. I loved every second of it. No wonder Neon picked it up pretty much on the first day. It was also a first day premiere at Sundance, and immediately Neon snatched it up and said, "This is ours and it will be distributed. So watch out for it, because it is absolutely fantastic." So my next film is Hive, which won the Grand Jury for World Cinema. And honestly, this film had everything to win with me, but it was just a little bit too slow. Again, I think it was also the last day, and I should have known that after watching Judas and the Black Messiah, nothing was going to hit the same as like that. Nothing was going to hit like that film did. Like, I should have ended it with Judas and the Black Messiah, but I didn't.
So the last film I wanted to mention is actually Summer of Soul. This is one of my top films.
That was my last film.
Yeah. So Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised. It is directed by Questlove. Can't wait for everyone to see this. I don't know what's going to happen with it yet, but we will definitely let you know, because it is such a good film.
It feels like a concert in your room, honestly. Like, I can't believe all of that footage was just left in a basement for 50 years. Like, how is that even possible? You had some gold stuff in there, but thankfully it's now out in the light and so many people will get to watch it. So yes, very excited for everyone to watch this film. And with that, I close Sundance.
Yes. So before we go, we just wanted to let you know our top 5 films from Sundance. Gabriela, take it away.
So, my first film, no surprise to anyone, was Judas and the Black Messiah. Loved this film. Again, check it out on HBO. My second one was Coda. No surprise to anyone. Loved it. You know, you can go into my IGTV video for more details. My third one was Passing, to the surprise of no one. After that, we have Rita Moreno, just the girl who decided to go for it, of course. And we close up my top 5 with Flea, which I'm surprised it made it to my top 5, but it was that good.
So my top 5 from Sundance 2021, number 5 is On the Count of 3. Number 4 is Rita Moreno, just the girl who decided to go for it. Number 3 is Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised. Number 2 is Judas and the Black Messiah, and number 1 is Coda.
My number 2 is Rita Moreno, just the girl who decided to go for it. And my number 1, no shock to anyone, is The Blazing World, for obvious reasons, because I lived for it.
We love that.
Honestly. Yes. More women in horror. Let's get that moving. Anna, you're next.
So does that mean that my number 1 is the Rita Moreno documentary?
Yes, ma'am. And with that, we conclude our Sundance recap. That's all for today's episode. We'd like to thank you for listening, to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. We would also like to thank Sundance for allowing us to attend the 2021 Sundance Film Festival as press. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and now TikTok. Where can they find you, posers?
So you can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27. I have, you know, my Twitter thread on Sundance there. also on Instagram at GabbyCristina27. I did a highlight of my stories from Sundance because they were very chaotic. You know, most of them of me sleep deprived. So please check them out. And finally, you can watch like my full list of my ranked Sundance films on Letterboxd at GabbyCristina.
So you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Anna_Sophia53 and on Letterboxd as Anna_Sophia.
So on Letterboxd, you can find me at Leading Mohicans, and you can see me post some of my hot takes. You can find me on my blog, Reinvention of a Lost Writer, on WordPress, and you can find me on Twitter at Leader of Mohicas, where I also post funny stuff from time to time.
And you can find me everywhere as at the Josie Marie. Again, thank you for listening, and remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.